Dollar Bin listeners, this is Sean Doughty coming at you. I wanted to send out a reminder to all of you before we jump into the show. Don't forget to vote for the 2010 Best of Dollar Bin Awards. You can either go to the website and click the link at the top of the page, or you can go to www.thedollarbin.net/vote and vote on that page. We are changing things up from last year. Instead of doing a whole nomination process on the forum, we are doing just a straight vote, and we will tabulate and calculate all the votes, and we will bring you the winners at the end of the month. And now for a little introduction into this week's show. Adam sat down with Shelton Drum, the owner of Heroes Aren't Hard to Find, a comic book store in Charlotte, North Carolina. Shelton acquired an incredibly awesome comic book collection, which just got a pedigree and named the Savannah Collection. I don't know if you guys have been following all that news coming out of Heroes and on the blog and the newsletters, but I sure have. The auction went live not too long ago, and I've been following it almost daily to kind of see what the books are going for. And right now, Showcase 22 is going for a little over $7,000. Crazy, but it is CGC graded at an 8.0, which is an insane grade for that comic. It's just incredible. I mean, the selection of comics in the Savannah collection are amazing, and the grades, I mean, there's like 9.4s, 8.0s. It's just incredible. So sit back and enjoy.
I'm here with Shelton Drum, owner of Heroes Aren't Hard to Find.
Howdy.
Shelton recently has a pedigree collection that's going up for auction through Heritage Auctions.
That's right.
And we're here to discuss a little bit about what all that means and how it all comes together. My first question to you, Shelton, is what is the significance of this collection?
Well, to me, it's the biggest single owner collection I've ever bought. It's the first pedigree I've ever had recognized as well. A pedigree is a collection that's recognized by CGC as an important one-owner collection that has a consistent high grade and is, you know, significant compared to the market that exists. They don't grant that pedigree very often. Actually, since they started grading books in, I guess, 99 or 2000, they've only recognized two new pedigrees since that time, this one and the Rocky Mountain a couple of years ago. Most of the pedigrees that are in the market are collections that were important before 1999, and they'd already been carrying a name like the Mile Highs. The collection that started the term pedigree, I guess, is that actually Edgar Church was the collector. Chuck Rosansky from Mile High discovered and bought the collection, and it was always referred to as that, and that became the first one named, although there are now a couple that had been found before then that carry a name as well.
What is it exactly that makes a collection a pedigree collection?
Well, consistent high grade for the collection itself. Also that it's a one-owner collection. In other words, the person who collected the books bought them as they came out, typically from the same place, you know, a certain newsstand or drugstore, wherever it was. In the case of the Savannah collection, I think the owner was buying from the newsstand early on, but sometime very early, you know, probably before 1960, he made a relationship with the distributor in the Savannah area, and he was actually going to the distributor and picking up, it looks like, one of everything that was on the stands each week or month before they ever got out to the stands. That helped the book stay in very high grade. I mean, they started out uncirculated.
Yeah.
And they only circulated through this one man's hands. So they're very high grade.
Most of these collections, I mean, any collection that you're actually going to think about being a pedigree collection, they've been around for years. I mean, so I take it there's ways to tell that something actually was part of the same characteristics or something.
Most of the pedigrees will have some unique characteristic to them. That's the whole deal of being consistent in a one-owner collection, that they all kind of look alike. In some cases, they smell alike. There's ways to identify, like the Mile High Edgar Church collection was stored in a cedar closet. I mean, they still smell of cedar. It's nice, you know.
Yeah.
They also had arrival dates done the same way on every book every time. So it's like a fingerprint, I guess. The characteristic of the Savannahs is there are no marks. You know, there are no arrival dates or anything like that. But when you look at them as a whole, you could say, wow, these all look alike. You know, I mean, they're consistent grade. I was just reading up on CGC standards for that, and for 60s books, they like to see a consistent 9.2 or better before they consider it worthy of a pedigree. And we're getting a lot of 9.2 and ups, and particularly even 9.6s and 9.8s are coming out of the collection already. So It's pretty exciting.
What is it about a pedigree comic that appeals to a comic collector?
Well, mainly the collector will, I guess, know or realize that, like I said, there's characteristics that go along with pedigree. So I guess there's some prestige to knowing that, you know, a book is out of a certain collection and it's going to be in that kind of quality.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to collectors since I acquired this about it. And some people say, well, I like to just have a piece of that. One guy said, I'm from Savannah. You know, I would love to have the books I like from a collection that say Savannah on it. You know, I mean, there's some personal reasons to do it. You know, I've always wanted to find high grade collections and hopefully get a pedigree because it's a legacy for me. The Mile High collection, who do you think of when you say, oh, it's a Mile High comic? Well, you think of Chuck, you know, and Mile High Comics. I want people to associate, wow, that's a Savannah book. That's one of the ones that heroes aren't hard to find, brought to market in 2011, you know.
It's kind of cool then, I guess.
Yeah, you know, more than anything, people are going for the grade.
Yeah.
And if they buy a Savannah book and they're pleased with it, you know, probably down the road they'd like to maybe collect some more Savannah books because they have a good feeling about the overall grade of that collection.
How many comics are in the collection, the Savannah collection?
I didn't count them one by one, but from the number of boxes and the estimate, it's well over 40,000. I think it's about 42 or 43,000.
How did you come across this collection?
Well, I got an email. Happens all the time. I've been around for a long, long time, and my address is out there. So I get a lot of emails with people wanting to sell me collections, and I read every one, obviously, and I've been on a lot of wild goose chases because everybody thinks they've got the greatest stuff in the world. When this email was from I didn't know how old she was, but it turns out she's about my age, one of four siblings saying, hey, our dad is 95 and he's been collecting all his life, and we're looking for some help on what to do with his comic books. I got back to him right away, and you can kind of tell when someone's making something up or they're just reporting what is. From the size and scope and time frame that the collection was built from, I knew it was going to be a pretty special collection.
We've been talking about a lot of what makes up this collection, but we haven't really gotten to any details. In your opinion, what's the most significant book in this collection?
There are books in this collection that I've never owned. I've had a lot of comics come through my hands. I haven't been able to keep them all. But I have a, you know, pretty good collection. But there are books in here that I've never seen, certainly never owned. Probably the most exciting box that we discovered was the box that had Showcase 1 and up and Brave and the Bold 1 and up and Justice League 1 and up. Is actually one of the very last boxes. Most of these books were stored in an attic. They were stored in various ways. Like sometime in the 80s, early 80s, I guess, the collector maybe quit going to the newsstand because comic shops were coming into being and they had more titles than the newsstand. So I could tell he started buying from comic shops. That's probably when he discovered, you know, me, because he was on my mailing list from sometime in the early 80s. I did shows all over, so he could have signed up anywhere. Probably at a Savannah Minicon I did, though. I could tell he started going to comic shops because he started buying bags, and eventually he was buying bags from me, apparently. I found packages of my product there. But the stuff from the 80s and up is bagged and stored in diamond shipping cases that he got from the store that he was buying from. That's from the 80s and up. From there back, they were mostly just in stacks in big Tupperware storage bins. But there were a few metal boxes in this attic, and they're made out of sheet metal. They look like air conditioning ductwork. To be honest, there was one that I just knew was part of the air conditioning system. We pried the top off of that, and that's where that mega load of early DCs was. It was pretty exciting.
So what other issues? You mentioned a lot of the, I guess, Justice League 1-Up and the Brave and Bold 1-Up. What else in there stands out?
Well, like I say, he was very complete. So, you know, DC was producing lots and lots and lots of genres throughout the 50s and early 60s. So you had lots of war books, and they're all in really high grade, which is very unusual. He had all those titles, you know, G.I. Combat and Our Army at War and Star Spangled and, you know, Our Fighting Forces. But he also had the romance books, the funny animals and teen humor, and, of course, all the superheroes. He had Westerns. It was just an amazing cross-section, I guess, of what was being published in 1957, 58, 59, all the way up. But the late 50s and early 60s are the things that are just so amazing to look at.
So it goes back to the late 50s. That's the early point of the collection?
Yeah, I could tell that he sought after old comics his whole life, it looked like. And maybe he retained some from his youth, but he started collecting in earnest sometime in the mid-50s. Those older issues were pretty battered. I think it kind of proves that he really never spent a whole lot of money on any one comic. I think the older stuff, like I say, was either from his youth, or he got it maybe at a yard sale or a hand-me-down. Someone said, "Hey, I heard you like comics," and you know how that works.
Yeah,
and it's always pretty well worn usually when it's a hand-me-down collection. But he started collecting everything when he started. I mean, it wasn't like, I'll just get the Superman titles or the Batman titles.
It
was
like, he discovered comics, he was in.
He was in. And I mean, and he was buying the Dell stuff and turned into Gold Key, and he's got all those. And he was buying, you know, he bought the Tower comics when they came out in the 60s. Of course, he had Marvels. Interesting, and one of the more sad points is that apparently Marvel comics weren't distributed in the Savannah area until maybe 63 or 64 on the newsstands.
Yeah.
Or at least through the distributor he was buying it, apparently.
Right.
Because his Marvel comics start, you know, in late 1963. So we've got Avengers 3 and up.
Yeah.
I got all the X-Men, all the Daredevil, but Spider-Man starts at 17 and Fantastic Four starts at 31. So we miss those keys, but it is solid from there on.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff from the late Silver and early Bronze, you know, is just immaculate. Like the Hulk 181's a 9.6. I think there's a Spider-Man 121 that's 9.6. There are going to be some 9.8s coming out of that range, but we haven't really graded those yet. We're kind of looking at the most high-profile stuff first and kind of concentrating on what might be hot right now in regard to movies and such.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Showcase 22 is probably going to be the premier dollar book out of the collection. It's an 8.0, and I think that'll probably do pretty well.
You currently have a few Hulk 181s.
Mm-hmm.
What's the highest grade that you've had of that prior?
Well, see, I've never been a slab guy.
Yeah.
I've never really sent a lot of stuff off to be graded. No particular reason, really, except that I feel pretty confident in my grading, and I sell most of my books face-to-face at shows or in the store. I don't do a lot of mail order and haven't gotten into auctions too much before this. And that was really the reason that CGC was created, was to guarantee both ends of the transaction. And a lot of times people were across the country, across the world, so I hadn't seen a whole big need to do any of my books. But I've had some pretty nice copies of that over the years.
Yeah.
There are a lot of graded Hulk 181s.
Yeah.
there may be a couple of hundred at 9.6 and a couple of hundred at 9.8, and there's one at 9.9.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, you know, still a 9.6 is a desirable book. Might not be the highest graded, but it is a high-graded book.
My history of comics is so spotty. I've been learning a lot the last few years.
Your school's not old enough.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I learned a lot at when I was helping out at New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of people are asking for wall books and stuff like that.
Right.
And I know you had the Hulk 181 on your wall there, and that is the first appearance of Wolverine, correct?
Or... It's the first full appearance.
First full appearance of
Wolverine. He had a panel in the last on the last page of 180, yeah.
And then the showcase that you're referring to, that's the Green Lantern, right?
That's the Silver Age Green Lantern first appearance.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Well, the Silver Age started with Showcase 4. That's the first appearance of the new Flash. He was the first revamped superhero, kind of redone for, you know, my age.
Yeah.
So a lot of heroes followed Showcase 4. And I guess Green Lantern was kind of like the next big guy at DC. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman continued through, but most of the superhero titles faded away in the late 40s, early 50s.
Okay.
So 1956 is when they started making their comeback.
So Silver Age basically started with the reinvention of Flash.
Right.
I never knew where that line was. That's kind of it.
It's pretty easy to define the Silver Age. It's harder to define the Bronze Age or where the Silver Age stops, you know. But generally it started with, everybody believes it started with Showcase 4. And there's one of those in there. Never owned one before now.
You keeping any of the issues for yourself?
I may eventually, you know, decide to keep a few. I really wanted to make sure that the whole of the collection got seen and known what was in there. But, you know, it's going to take a while to sell that many books. So, you know, down the road, there may be a few I'll pull aside and not not submit to auction.
Sean says you have to go visit your books, and it's quite a process to do that.
Oh, when they're at CGC?
They're vaulted up, I guess.
Yeah, I'd never been to CGC before the trip back in November when we were given the pedigree, but I was very impressed.
Yeah.
It's like Fort Knox. You know, you got to have an invitation to get in through the gate. And once you get in through the gate and you go into the lobby, the main lobby, that's as far as you're going. You can't go back and see the operation. You can't go back and see what they're working on because they don't want anybody having any access to any of that. So pretty sophisticated key lock getting back into that part of it. And off of that lobby area are four nice kind of private viewing rooms or work room, conference room type places. When I came in, I brought in 14 mag boxes of these books to give them a good idea of what the runs look like and how many there were. And we put them on one of those tables, and the guys came out from their workspace in the back and kind of went through them all. And then they disappeared again to go discuss it. And then they came back out and said, we can do a pedigree on that. But when I left that day, I didn't want to carry those books around. I mean, we were at the beach, you know, so I didn't want to leave them in the car or whatever. And, I felt really comfortable when they wheeled them back there and said they would just drive the hand truck into the vault and it'd be locked up and safe. And it must be huge, but I feel very comfortable leaving my merchandise there.
They came and picked up the rest of them in like an armored truck.
Well, it wasn't armored, but
it was a very secure truck.
It was a secure truck. This is Heritage we're talking about
now. Okay, so Heritage picked them up.
So once I had signed the paperwork with Heritage and they were going to transport it, their internal company rules are, you know, once they take possession, they have to have two sets of eyes on the merchandise until it's secured at CGC or at their Dallas location. They flew a driver out from Dallas and rented a truck, and Steve Borak, one of the guys who I was dealing with from Heritage, rode with him in the truck to CGC, directly to CGC, and they offloaded it all and put it inside CGC, and that's where it's been ever since.
So it's definitely a serious operation.
Yeah, and very professional. I was secure.
And this is, like you said, this is your first experience with an auction.
It is. I mean, I've put a couple of things on eBay, but usually not comic books. You know, it's usually some unique item that we have here at the store or whatever, but it's interesting to watch it all develop. Heritage is, they have such a sophisticated website and model. Every time more of my Savannah books are graded, you know, like I see all the submission forms, and then when they're coming back graded and they're being sent to Heritage, I see that process of what's going out there. And then in a couple of days, I see it appear on their site, and they keep building more info on each book. They'll put up the item with a little short description, and then within a couple of days or a week, they'll have a photograph up with a more detailed description. Anytime there's a book for sale on Heritage, you can click on that item, and it gives you all kinds of historical information, like past sales for that book and all the various grades, GPA analysis, which is all the sales everywhere of graded books.
Yeah.
And also the Overstreet's right there in front of you, as well as a census on how many copies of that particular book are graded and what's the highest one graded and all that kind of thing. So it's a good site.
So how's the auction going to work?
The first time these books will be offered will be February 24th and 5th and 6th, I think. It might just be the 24th and 5th, but they will be in the February signature auction, Dallas signature auction. On February 7th, the bids will open for these books on the internet, and then on the 24th, the internet bids, I think, will close, and it'll be a live auction, like on the phone or whoever might be, you know, at the actual facility. And that'll be, you can watch that live on their website.
Oh, you actually watch the live auction?
You can see a feed, yeah.
So it is actually going to be a physical room full of people bidding.
Yes.
And you can call in proxy bids, I guess.
Yeah, I think mostly they're selling more than just my books. You know, there's a lot of artwork for sale that weekend.
Okay.
Other people's books. You know, it's a big auction. I just got the final report of what's going to be in that auction of mine.
Okay.
233 items.
So it's a long auction.
3 days.
Yeah, I mean, with all your stuff and plus who knows how much other stuff.
But, I mean, there's only 233 Savannah books
yeah.
in this first offering.
It's going to be a long process.
It could go on for a while. But besides the signature auctions, which they have 4 times a year, I think the next one will be in May, they have a weekly internet auction on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. So you can bid all week, and then the auctions close on Sunday night every week. And there'll be, you know, 50 to 100 items of mine
yeah.
every week.
Okay.
Throughout the year, I guess.
That you can just buy online.
Yeah.
A little auction. Bid on online.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. You can bid on the signature auction prior to it opening to the live part.
Yeah.
I guess that's where the bids start, you know, whatever the high bid is on
the
internet.
That way, and, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there will be Savannah books available each week for the foreseeable future.
Are there starting bids on these books?
No, it's no minimum.
Really? So it's just wherever the market drives it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
You don't want to discourage people, I guess.
You know, if you put a minimum on there, you may discourage somebody from getting started, you know. If a book is worthy, it's going to find its home, you know.
Yeah.
This first group of books are pretty worthy. I mean, there are a lot of highest graded in the census that are coming up in this first auction. I'd love to be keeping some of those, but, I mean, then it would be just a secret, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to be for sale.
And anybody can log in and create an account on a Heritage site? And
absolutely. It's free to create an account. I would say go in, create an account just so you can look at the stuff deeply. You
yeah.
know, you can see it without having an account, but you can get all that added information I was talking about once you have an account. On our website, we have a direct link to a Savannah sort.
Okay.
So you click on our button for the Savannah collection. It'll take you to Heritage, and you can sort. That's another thing about their site. You can sort by Savannah. You can sort by Savannah with the highest graded. You can sort by Savannah 9.8 only.
Yeah.
Look for, you know, how many 9.8 anythings do they have on there?
Yeah.
It's a very, very good database. I've had a lot of fun. You know, I can spend hours on there. Yeah, it takes you right there, and you can sign up from that page and get all that deeper information, all the market analysis and yeah. census information. That's on the CGC site, too. It's not as complete. CGC site is really cool. There's obviously the census of all the books they've ever graded, so you can see what the highest graded is wow. at any given time on any given book. But they also have, there's a tab for resources, and one of those resources has the definitions for the pedigree and stuff, but another one is for the gallery, and CGC will photograph particular pedigrees and highest gradeds and unique odd books that you don't see very often, and they've built this nice big gallery, and I was looking today, there's almost 100 Savannah books in the gallery right now.
Yeah.
So that's a sortable database as well. And you can see the census information attached to those gallery shots. So that's another good place to go and look
cool.
at the books.
I wasn't aware of that. I'm going to have to go check out that site. I briefly looked at the Savannah collection on the Heritage site.
Okay.
I briefly looked at that. And like you said, like at heroesonline.com, you guys have a link to that.
Right.
It's already filtered. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely remarkable. I mean, it's you found something special, obviously.
Yeah. It's sort of as a collector, you know, it's the stash you kind of dream of or search for, really, for a long, long time. I mean, I've been collecting comic books well over 40 years, 45 years maybe, almost 50. And, you know, I've seen nice books and had nice collections, but this is the biggest, nicest one I've ever had, all in one place.
How does it feel to briefly own something like that and sell it away? I mean, you've owned a store for years, so obviously you've been doing that for years. But.
Yeah, and I always miss it. You know, I've had books that I say, wow, I wish I had that back.
Yeah.
Because the market has done incredible things in the last several years. And from the time I started collecting until now, it's just insane the change in values of these books. And I guess it was a little easier to say, all right, this is a collection. Just haul the whole thing off and let's see how the chips fall, you know,
yeah.
rather than piecemeal it out and say, I'm going to hang on to the showcase run or whatever.
Yeah.
They're out of sight, you know, so I haven't had my hands on them yeah. in a couple of months now. So it's easier to deal with the fact that they're not coming back to here.
But I assume that when you did pick up the collection and brought it in here, you started digging through it and just...
Yes and no. I was very excited about it and proud of it and brought all the employees in to look at it and say, hey, look, this is what I've been working on for the last year, because it took a year to finalize the deal, and it did finalize this past spring of 2010, like in April, I guess. But I forbid them to touch it because they were raw, you know, pretty much unbagged books. You just can't really handle books like that. So I didn't really want to touch the books again until I was, you know, processing the books, putting them in sleeves and deciding exactly where they were going to go. So, yeah, I would come in and pull a box out occasionally and just kind of easily, you know, open up the leaves there and see what was in there. And I kind of lobbied from spring until fall to get the pedigree and to assess which direction to go with the collection. You referred to the show in New York. That was in October.
And I remember seeing the CGC guys grinning and gathering around your little sample you brought there.
Yeah, I took the showcases and the Brave and Bolds. Two pretty hard runs and a lot of important books in those runs.
Yeah.
So I took those to New York to gauge reaction and to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good response.
Yeah.
A lot of good word of mouth. People who are in the know and in the market actually got a chance to see the books raw and see how sparkly they are. And like I say, the CGC, Mark Haspel, who's the president at CGC and pretty much the guy who decides whether pedigree's coming or not. You know, there's a committee, but if he doesn't think it should be, this probably not going to get reviewed. You know, Mark looked at it for some time that day and said, well, what do you think? He says, well, it's not very often when I can't immediately say no. And he says, and I can't say no. We'll need to see more books. And a month after that we got together with the bigger sampling. And I guess his mind was kind of made up. He just wanted to see more of it.
Yeah.
And he and a couple other guys there at CGC granted that pedigree.
Yeah. Do you think were these read by the original owner? Did he read all of them, do you think?
I'd like to think he read them all, but I'm not sure he could have.
Yeah.
There's so many books. Plus, I mean, there are some books that just look like they've never been handled. He was very careful if he did read them all. I think he looked at them all.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the same way now with all the books that come through the store. It's like, there's no way I can read every book, but I like to be here on New Comic Day so that I can be the person putting all the books on the rack that day. And I don't pull all the reserves. I don't count every book, but I like to take the job of taking the books out of the box and putting them on the rack, and I have a chance to see every book, you know? So I'm sure he at least enjoyed them that much.
And I'm guessing a lot of the winners of these auctions aren't going to be reading theirs. They're going to be slabbed and CGC'd.
Well, they are going to be slabbed. nothing says they can't break it open and enjoy it, but maybe defeats the purpose of the grading. You know, I've always been on both sides of that fence.
Yeah.
But when you have historical publications that are preserved in such a state that they're like museum quality, really, you can't afford to diminish that quality and value.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to read comics now.
Yeah, why?
You really don't have to read a 9.6 showcase 23, you know? There's just no point in reading it that way. Get a VG copy if you want an original, or just, you know, read an archive or a showcase or a reprint black and white books. And most of the key books are reprinted in single issues. You know, usually more than once or twice. So they're out there to read. There's a dealer who sells some CGC books, but he sells most of his books with a reader copy, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah, it's neat.
It's like takes the argument right away.
Yeah.
Well, why would I buy that? I can't read it. Well, here, read this one. You know, it's the same book, but you're not going to hurt it.
Yeah.
And it's a great storage package encased in Mylar and then encased in an airtight plastic hard case. It's documented. I mean, for insurance purposes, I think CGC is a great idea because every book has a serial number after it's graded, proven what grade it is. So,
five,
10 years down the road, if there's a loss, it's documented what grade it was, and then the replacement value is whatever the market value is that year. CGC certainly has its merits.
So I noticed that you had some notes, and you said you had your crib sheet there, and you got your price guide. Is there anything else that you kind of looking to discuss?
I do have the inventory of lots that are going to be going up the 24th, or actually going up on the 7th, and be sold on the 24th, 5th, and 6th of February. And just out of the first two pages, which is really only 20 books. I think I counted, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 8 that are the highest graded, either tied for or the only highest graded in the CGC census. So I don't know how that percentage is going to work out through the whole thing. I haven't researched each one individually, but I can do all that research on Heritage. It's just a matter of pulling it up and reading about it, you know. I'm pretty anxious to see what a 9.6 Savannah copy highest graded, how it compares to Guide when it sells, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of a question that I was kind of thinking about. And so Guide comes up with these prices, but if something like this has never existed before, then how does Guide know what it's going to go for?
Well, the Guide is supposed to be a reflection of past sales.
Yeah.
Mostly kind of an average of past sales, but the Guide only goes up to 9.2, and they're... What, 4 grades or more after that?
Yeah.
Higher grades than what the Guide reflects. So anything higher than a 9.2 theoretically goes for more than what's in the Guide. The Guide is some time old, at least 6 months to a year at any given time.
It is just a guide.
It is just a guide.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier GPA, which is a company that pulls data from all the various sale sites, all the auction sites of graded books. And reports high sales and trends and percentages and all that kind of stuff. So it's amazing to me that high-grade books really don't have anything to do with Guide.
Yeah.
Past sales and desirability right now and how scarce it is and how close to the top of the census it is and how many are in the market. Sometimes, like you say, if it's the only one, it could go crazy or maybe nobody's interested. I don't know. But I think more than likely it's going to go on the higher end if it's the only one graded.
Yeah.
And there are some of those. I mean, we're submitting books that are in high grade that no one submitted before, you know.
Like ever even in a worth grading condition, I guess.
Well, I mean, like say the Many Loves of W. Gillis.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a complete run of the Many Loves of W. Gillis in the Savannah collection. And most of them were high grade, like 8.0, 8.5, some 9.2s and 9.4s. And I looked at the census on that book early on, and only a third of those issues had anything in the census at all. You know, there were some of those that had never been submitted. So eventually the whole run will be out there, and they'll all be Savannahs, and someone hopefully down the road will say, I want to have all 26, I think it is, of the Many Loves of W. Gillis, and I want them all to be the Savannahs. You know,
yeah.
It could happen. There are romance books that there are no copies graded of, and we're getting 9.4s and 9.6s and some 9.8s on those. A lot of the war books are going to be the highest graded. I don't know why it is, but I guess the war books were just read and enjoyed by boys and their cousins and kids and,
just,
you know,
torn up.
Red. And
It's
just hard to find 50s and early 60s war comics in high grade, and there are a lot of those in here. I think those will be very popular.
In the last couple of years, there was a lot of hype brought up, mainly by the Action Number One that went for, I think, the highest, and then it got replaced shortly after by Detective Number One, or I can't remember which.
There was an Action One sold for, you know, they said $1 million plus, and then a Detective 27 was sold by Heritage.
Yeah.
That the end value was a little more than the Action was by. Mm-hmm. 50,000 or something.
Yeah.
And then another Action One sold that was, you know, half a million more than that. I wish I had those in there.
But this collection is nothing to laugh at for sure.
No. I mean, you know, Action One and Detective 27 are 20 years before this collection starts, and this collection starts 50 years ago. So that's why I say I wish when I started collecting 40 years ago, I was more interested in Golden Age than I was. I was all about finishing up my Spider-Man collection, you know, and I love my Spider-Man collection. Those values are nothing to sneeze at either, but, you know, you could buy an Action One at that time for a couple of $100 or $500 for a pretty nice one.
Like you said, the market
if I'd
today.
Only known.
The market today, it's funny because everybody talks about, you know, comics being the market that it is now with current comics, at least, you know, it's a luxury sale. So when the economy gets tight, you know, sales drop. But, I mean, the collectors are obviously still out there collecting.
Well, yeah. Comics are history. They're not making any more, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15s or Showcase 4s. I mean, there's a finite number. A lot were destroyed. I'm sure there's still some hidden that we don't know about. Even Action 1, probably. You know, there was another Action 1
discovered
just, yeah, you know, less than a year ago, and it brought $500,000, and it wasn't even a high grade book. It was mid grade.
Remember that.
So, I mean, there are more collections out there, but they're fewer and further between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing about new comics, though, the print runs are smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, what does that mean? It means the books from this year are going to be some of the toughest ones to find 20 years from now. I mean, you're going to find all kinds of,
I hadn't really thought of it that
80s
way,
and 90s books, but you're not going to find a whole lot of 2011 copies.
I haven't thought about that. In the future, when the economy was tight is when it's going to be harder to find books.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is print runs are going down because online reading,
true,
and downloads are going up.
Yeah.
I don't think paper's going to go away. I hope not. I think there are enough people who, even young people, mm-hmm, who enjoy holding an issue of a comic book rather than downloading it. I mean, it's cool. I look at stuff online, you know, especially previews or maybe even read something on a regular basis online. But if you collect it there, eventually you're going to lose your hard drive, you know, and your whole collection is going to be gone,
yeah,
unless it's backed up somewhere. At least with paper comics, you know, it's there until it just disintegrates, which is way past our lifetime.
Yeah. How long has Heroes Aren't Hard to Find been around?
Opened in 1980, January of 1980, so 31 years.
So I'm assuming that means you seriously started collecting a little bit before then, even, you said.
Well, yeah. I started seriously collecting in the mid-60s.
Yeah.
Actually buying multiple copies of issues I liked, especially the Marvels at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And by the early 70s, when I was in college, I was putting notices on bulletin boards at college, you know, buying comics or let's trade comics. From there, I was going to flea markets looking for back issues. You know, this was 72, 73. And by late 73, early 74, I was setting up at those flea markets because I had more comics than the guys that were selling comics. And I figured that was the best way to be there and find stuff. You know, I mean, I get to the flea market early every month and go around and check everybody who sold comics and see what they had that I needed. So I built my collection there and my business. It was, I guess, around that same time, 75, 76, that Phil Suling pioneered the direct sale market and started buying comics directly from the publishers and offering them to people across the country. And I was buying from him and, mm-hmm, some of the other early distributors and selling new comics on a monthly basis at the flea market to subscribers. Some of those guys are still subscribers,
yeah,
today. I've seen them every month for a while, and now every week for 30-something years.
Yeah.
We're a hardcore lot.
Is there anything else about the collection or anything?
Hopefully we'll have some of those books to look at Heroes Con, stuff that hadn't been sold yet.
Yeah.
At auction, we'll try to have some on display so you can,
that's cool,
see them up close.
Not too close.
Because by June, we certainly won't have them all sold.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Wow, that's going to be, that's a trek.
Yeah, like I said, there's 322 in this first auction. Last I talked to Steve, he had submitted about 2,700 items to CGC to be graded. We're doing some pre-screens on those. Like, he'll look at a given title and say, all right, if it doesn't make a certain grade, then maybe we won't spend the money to grade that when we'll sell it raw. That's the other thing. We will be selling some raw books and some lots of books.
Okay.
Down the road through Heritage, because it costs, you know, minimum of almost $20 to grade a book. Older books with you know, some value could be hundreds of dollars per grade.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a break point where you may not want to spend that money to grade a book that's really only going to be worth $50 or $60. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at as a book. But if you're going to spend $25 to get 60, and you'd probably get 60 anyway, maybe not grade that one. Those books will come with a certificate, and if you keep that certificate and that provenance, you know, the invoice of where you bought it, it'll still carry that pedigree. And if you ever want to submit it to CGC, they will recognize it. So it'll always be a Savannah book if you hang on to the paperwork.
Yeah.
You may be able to buy the entire Booster Gold Savannah
yeah,
pedigree collection in one fell swoop at some point, you know?
Yeah.
Because to get through 40,000 books, we're going to have to, you know, lump some together.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I love hearing about that collection, Sheldon. I definitely thank you for your time and just enthusiasm of watching you tell the story. I love that as well.
You know, it's been a year and a half since I got that first email, and I've been excited the whole time. I mean, there's not been a moment when I haven't thought about it, you know? Like, now we're getting down to it. You know, it's like, you know, it's weird. It's stressful. Because there's uncertainty about it.
Yeah.
But I think it'll work out all right.
Well, I hope the best for it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate you talking to me about it. Like I say, go to our site, heroesonline.com, yeah. and just look for the Showcase 4 icon on the left side that says Heritage Savannah Collection or whatever. Click through and look at them because they're fun to look at.
And like you said, you can sign up to look at them. Just because you sign up doesn't mean you have to buy them, but it is one step closer.
But if you do want to buy them,
yeah.
you got to sign up.
Yeah. But they're there. Yeah. You might get a deal.
That's right.
Who knows?
Might just steal one. You never know.
Thank you, Sheldon.
Thank you, Adam.